The End of the Long Dry, written and read by Fresney. Fandom Sherlock BBC, pairing Sherlock John Watson. Warnings for Omegaverse. Also, this is a cisgender bent story for both Sherlock and John. This is a female Omega, female Beta story, part of the Variations on an Equation series. The reality where Moira Moriarty's sister Eileen was visited in Dublin from London. Martin took his hand to Jimmy, and Jimmy was just a little one, and Moira just stood there terrified of what he'd do if she did anything. It wasn't even the first time, but having her sister there helped to get a bit of fresh on the situation she was in. She waited until Martin was out and on a job, taken down a bank, and they left. They just left. Moira knew she couldn't stay with her sister. Once Martin got back, he'd come looking. She needed to disappear was what she needed. She borrowed some funds from Eileen. Moira had an old friend who had immigrated, who knew a bloke with a sheep station in New South Wales. That station needed a cook and a general skivvy. On the strength of that, they got on a plane and left. She didn't tell Eileen where she was heading. It was for the best. She told the lovely Beta at immigration that she was there on holiday with her girl. Moira might have lied, but when she got out there with Jimmy, she could finally breathe for the first time in years. Well, Jimmy was just a little one, a clever little one, who deserved a chance to grow up without a poison alpha like Martin Moriarty in her life. She dealt with immigration status eventually. No fear. Moira was the type who liked the right side of the law. Jimmy grew up with wide open sky above her and a friendly sheepdog named Skip, who might have been a little afraid of Jimmy, though no one knew why. She rode horses and burned things on campfires, and once she found a poor little sick lamb that she examined from the inside out, it was boring and dull and it stank of sheep, and she couldn't ever get the manure out of her wellies. Then she presented as a mega, and all the alfs came sniffing. No, just no. She was not getting stuck in the back end of nowhere with a brat in her belly. She found a doctor with a secret. There was always something. And had that possibility taken care of right there. There were diet pills that she could take that, while they didn't eliminate her heats, they did stretch out the dry spells, something lovely. She left the station. Jimmy dusted off the dust and went to a city, a real city. She came to Melbourne, suffering in the midst of the big dry, and wasn't that fun? Where there was scarcity, there was opportunity. She tugged on those water rights and that control. Pump the groundwater, don't pump the groundwater. High pesticides and sinking land. Dusty farms and scrub growing where crops once did. Really, it was about control. Protect the fish in the rivers, don't protect the fish in the rivers. But really, it was about control. She controlled the water. Water was life. Temperance Holmes liked to say, whiskey's for drinking and water is for fighting over. If Jane heard her friend, Sherlock's mum, say that once, she said it 1,000 times. Then on cue, Sherlock's father would laugh, because Sherlock's mum was pretty well named and didn't drink alcohol. But he did wear a gun to shoot snakes and other slithering things, while he was setting up a well in whatever corner of the world that Charity Water had landed the Holmes in. There was a time that Jane was frankly envious. Her father wore a suit and worked in a bank. He drank 3 martinis at the club, and another 2 when he got home. Mum was about the same. They were transferred just as often as the Holmes, but it felt as if the Holmes were doing something that mattered. All 3 of the Holmes' children, Prudence Mycroft, Hope Sherinford, and Verity Sherlock, did things that mattered. They had adventures. They grew up in deserts. and also jungles. The first day Jane met Sherlock was at the Bangkok British Academy for the children of expats, when she was 12 and Sherlock was 9. She was actually more Sherlock's big sister Sherry's age, but Sherlock was 2 grades ahead and Jane was 1 behind. Not because Jane wasn't smart, but she'd changed schools a few times. There she was on the playground with a 9-year-old in faded dungarees, a plain black t-shirt and a flower stuck haphazardly in her black braid. Mr. Stanford had no sooner asked Jane to show Sherlock around and left to do teacherly things, when Sherlock said, "Your father is having an affair with his secretary." Since Jane's father was generally having an affair with his secretary, Jane didn't take offense. "How did you know?" Sherlock's fists unclenched. "Aren't you going to become angry?" "Well, it's true, so no." Jane scuffed a shoe in the ground. "But how did you know?" Sherlock swallowed and stared up at Jane with the most enormous green eyes Jane had ever seen. "I'm precocious and rambunctious. I can't stop moving around sometimes. I see and I observe. I heard him after he dropped you off." Given his phone conversation's mix of business with sexual innuendo, and he had 3 condoms in his wallet, and "That's enough to go on," said Jane, who really did not need to know more. She heard enough from Harry about it. "Want to play in the jungle bars?" Sherlock nibbled on her lower lip. "I'm building something. Do you want to see the plans?" Jane agreed, and Sherlock carefully pulled a green-tabbed binder out of her rucksack. They were on page 36 when Sherlock said, "Jane, will you bond with me?" Her green eyes were simply enormous in her pale little face that was made of awkward sharp angles and seriousness. Jane didn't even know what to say to that. "Ask me again when we're older? Maybe after we've presented. We might not suit." "We will. I've decided." Sherlock held out her hand. "But that makes sense." They shook on it, although Jane didn't think much more of it. Sherlock was 9. Now, by page 48, Jane learned that when Sherlock's older sister, Prudence Mycroft, was 9, she'd invented a pump that could easily draw water from a river 1,000 feet away. All that was required was 1,000 feet of tubing and a used pedal elliptical, the kind that were purchased for Christmas gifts and under the bed a few days after Boxing Day. It was practical, economical, easy to explain, and easy to set up. By the time Mycroft, because she felt that Prudence sounded like someone from the 17th century, was 18, she'd presented as an alpha and was running her own charity to provide the pumps to villages in over 20 countries. She was also taking care of Sherry and Sherlock, what with their parents generally off in some nearby village being charitable. If Sherlock thought her oldest sister was a pompous bore, Sherlock was even more scornful of her other sister, Hope Sherrinford, who tried to run away to Paris when she was 9. Sherry loved couture. Jane sympathized. There's one in every family. Now, by the time Sherry, because she thought Hope was a boring name, was 18, she was a beta living in a Paris apartment, paid for by a rather older alpha, and learning absolutely everything about fabric and construction. She'd laugh when Sherlock said anything about it. "Sherl, I'm taking advantage of my opportunities." Anyway, Francois knows some amazing tricks. But that was years later. The plans that Sherlock showed Jane that day were for a net woven from plastic scavenged from garbage dumps that would catch beads of water from fog, which would then spin down the complex web of fibers to fill a gallon bucket after an hour. It was beautiful. Also deadly to birds that flew in, which, as Sherlock angrily explained, is why I hate birds. "You'll think of something," said Jane, retaping up the cuts in her hands from all those weeks of weaving. Sherlock, who went by that name because there were 3 other Verities in the family, thought of something brilliant. But by then, her family had moved to Cambodia, while Jane's family had been transferred to Taiwan. But Sherlock sent Jane a detailed prospectus. Every few weeks, there would be a bundle of paper that had come from some other spot in the world. Then, after a while, paper was replaced by surprise visits. By the time Jane was 19, Sherlock had shown up at Jane's door no less than 103 times. Somehow, once Sherlock reached 12, she figured out how to get free or almost free rides on transport carriers and military planes, or once on Sherry's current lover's private plane. None of it even remotely safe once she presented as an Omega at 13. When Jane said something, Sherlock looked at her and said, "Don't be a moron. You're an enormous reflector of ideas." She scowled at the offending carpet. "You don't generate any yourself, but through your idiotic suggestions, I come up with my own solutions." Which was practically an I love you in Sherlock speak. Her own I love you went like this. Sherlock was visiting, and Jane found a bottle of Diadex in the bathroom. "Why do you have this? You're already thin enough. For that matter, Mycroft isn't fat either." Sherlock, who by 14 was going through an awkward growth phase, glared at her. "That's not what it's for. It's to suppress my heats. They're boring." Jane confiscated the bottle, pretending that Sherlock couldn't get more. "You could have a heart attack. Come on. Let's go research the effects of..." She looked at the bottle. "Sinephrine, supratramine, and pseudoephedrine." "What the hell, Sherlock?" Because Sherlock respected facts. By the time they were done, Jane had her hands on her hips and what Harry called her Jane of Arc look. "Promise me you won't take any more of these." She took Sherlock's hands and shook them. "Promise me." Sherlock glared at the floor and twisted her body of growing angles this way and that. "I promise." Jane gave her a hug. "It's just I worry." Sherlock sighed a long kettle sigh and snuggled in for that kind of long hug that had Jane finally patting her back and kissing her forehead to get her to let go. When this happened, Jane was 17 and not yet presented, which was embarrassing. Also, she knew what that probably meant. She was already telling herself that she never wanted children, just in case. But she ate all the foods that she was supposed to eat. She bought the beta incense that was supposed to make her present as an alpha or an omega. It should have been strange when Sherlock, already presented and growing rapidly in months of absence, showed up like a known stranger. But it was always just like stepping back into a perfect fit. Anyway, Sherlock always showed up when Jane needed a visit the most. When her dad started an affair with his latest Omega secretary. When her mom had the counter affair with his tennis coach. When they moved again. When really, there were too many times to list. Jane had no idea how Sherlock knew, other than Sherlock was Sherlock. And she knew everything of just by looking at them. By 19, Jane finally presented as a beta. She felt useless. She felt dull and short and plain. Sherlock descended on the house like an army. Sherlock, who at 16 was on the other side of awkward, and was now as tall and gorgeous an Omega as could possibly be, should have made Jane feel even more plain. She walked through the front door and said, "I have an idea. Come with me if it's convenient. If it isn't, you're coming anyway." Jane laughed, put on clothes that weren't the clothes of self-disgust. It was hard to feel dull and boring when cannibalizing a VW bug and doing something insanely complicated with tubing to build a still that turned the frankly disgusting river water into a glass of clean, drinkable water. Jane felt not exactly brilliant, because all she did was what she was told, but she didn't feel boring either. There was the way things changed. Jane was a beta. Sherlock was an omega. The way Sherlock's scent deepened in this way, Jane couldn't have expected. The way Jane would find herself picking up after Sherlock, making sure she ate, she tried not to dwell on it. When she wasn't wallowing in self-pity, as it turned out, a puckish sense of humor and a temper that had been well-tempered by years of dealing with Sherlock went a long way towards pulling. now that presentation meant she was interested in pulling. By the time Jane's family had moved three more times, it was a busy 8 months, and had crossed three continents. She was feeling fairly confident in her own appeal. Oh, grown alphas didn't slam on the brakes and get rear-ended like the time Sherlock showed up, wearing that black leather outfit Sherry had pried her into, but Jane did well. Well enough that she somehow wanted Sherlock to know that she wasn't some pathetic loser, waiting for her to drop in and shine a light on her life. Jane had acquired a frankly glorious-looking hickey from Sam Sawyer, an alpha from her tennis class. And as soon as she'd heard Sherlock downstairs, Jane threw on a halter top that would frame it perfectly. Under an overshirt, because there was no way she was having that conversation with her mom. That could wait until after she started uni. Somehow, she and Sherlock ended up having the worst row they'd ever had. Sherlock had dragged her off to the Temple of the Reclining Buddha, which wasn't at all like the garbage bumps they'd normally ended up in. Jane casually took off her shirt. Ever after, she associated the scent of frangipani petals that were slowly floating down from the tree above them with that moment. Sherlock took one look at her and said, "You were attacked." Wait, no additional bruising, mark consistent with prolonged suction, dentation typical of an alpha. She pushed Jane right and left, examining her. Jane pulled away. "It's just a hickey. Just, I suppose next you'll tell me you had intercourse with this alpha." Sherlock's eyes widened. "You have? Is it serious?" "No, based on pupil dilation, it's not. Tell me. I could understand if it were serious, but how could you?" That last bit sounded a little higher than the rest. Sherlock's tone had Jane on edge. "Sherlock, I'm not a kid. I'm 3 years older than you are. It's not as if I wait around for you to show up." Which was not the direction that Jane wanted to go, because that would be beyond pathetic. "I move, I make friends. I date, I have sex. It's not a big deal. Just someone I met. I meet people. I've been meeting people on three continents." Which was possibly more than the reclining Buddha wanted to hear, but she'd said it. Jane Watson was taking control of her own identity as a sexually active adult, taking a reasonable gap year before university, and Mum could just shut it. But Sherlock was looking at her as if Jane was an insect. "You're acting as if I should congratulate you. I can't congratulate you for... You were supposed to... Do they buy you things? Perhaps this top, which is atrocious and doesn't suit your skin tone." "Sherlock, I'm not Sherry." Which was when things got worse. And that was on Jane, and she knew it. Sherlock was nothing if not touchy about her sisters. Sherlock left her there, getting rotting frangipani petals in her hair. She ran after her, but Sherlock had giraffe legs. Jane tried calling, emailing, and writing. 3 weeks later, Sherlock sent her a letter that read, "I have deleted the previous encounter. If you would like to continue our previous working relationship, send me a postcard of a reclining Buddha to indicate no, or a sitting Buddha to indicate yes. VSH." Jane smiled as she dragged her finger over the signature, and imagined that some of the oils of Sherlock's hands were on there somewhere. Jane sent Sherlock a postcard with 20 seated Buddhas and a note asking when they could get together. Sherlock showed up 3 days later with an idea for membrane desalination. The fall game. They roomed together at uni. Because why not the torture of rooming with her drop-dead gorgeous best friend, who was entirely out of her league? Sherlock decided to take a self-created program designed to meet the needs of a consulting hydrologist. Because, well, Sherlock would. Jane studied mechanical engineering, because after taking apart so many things, she wanted to know what she'd actually been doing. Almost getting herself killed, as she later learned. Still, any still that didn't blow up was a good one. She continued to pull fairly well, although after one spectacular hissy fit on Sherlock's part, Jane kept a 1,000-foot distance policy between her dates and Sherlock. They weren't serious, not that betas didn't bond these days, but with Sherlock and her work and all, light and fun was best. As it was, Sherlock would grumble when Jane came back from a particularly successful date and roll over on her bed. Sometimes she wouldn't speak for days. Of course, Jane knew that one of these days, Sherlock was going to wake up to the fact that her scent was warm and nubile as a summer's day, and just as full of promise. She'd find an alpha friend. Not that it happened at uni. Sherlock could tell what the other students had had for breakfast, or where they were from, or the tiniest things that had happened to them, and yet completely miss the alphas throwing themselves at her gorgeous, if booted, feet. There were extra cupcakes on her tray, and extra cups of coffee at the student sock, and yes, still the occasional traffic accident, still Sherry's fault. And Sherlock would blink awake from wherever she'd been in her mind palace and blast off in another direction entirely. Jane figured it was because they were all university students. When she pictured who Sherlock would end up with, which she sadly did fairly often, they'd be sophisticated, cosmopolitan, tall, muscular, brilliant, and handsome. An alpha, probably one of those one true pairings. But as far as Jane could tell, Sherlock thought alphas were made to be beasts of burden, and since she already had a beast of burden in Jane, there was no need to bother. The sheer number of times Sherlock would prance around their dorm room, and later their apartment, wearing some sort of ridiculous get-up that screamed, "Gift from Sherry," and say, "Jane, I want you to steam my ball valve." Jane would roll her eyes and trudge off to the storage unit where they kept Sherlock's experiments to steam clean her ball valves. She had no idea what Sherlock was doing to get them contaminated, but this was their shared life's work, so she was fine with it. There she'd be, treating valves to high temperatures, or maybe cleaning the buildup off the reverse osmosis membranes, or making notations on the current settings on the hydrostatic balance on the vacuum solar flash desalination unit, or any of the other things Sherlock would ask her to do. And really, she'd just be brooding over Sherlock. Sherlock was an Omega, a brilliant Omega with a mother who was gagging for grandchildren. Sex, heat, bonding, children. The whole lot was going to happen eventually. Well, Jane was a beta. A whiff of Sherlock's scent, the touch of her hand, or any of it, had Jane wanting to take care of her. Make sure she had enough to eat, clean up their place, just make sure she was all right. It was basic biology. Her scent calmed Sherlock down, and Sherlock's wound Jane up into nesting. Sherlock was her best friend. She'd asked Jane to be the milk mother, and Jane would say yes, because when had she said no? And Jane was going to die a little inside and possibly discover a previously undiscovered talent for writing soppy poetry. She tried writing a soppy poem in preparation. Sherlock grabbed it while she was writing because Sherlock had the sense of personal space of a cat. Read the first line and said, "If you turn this in for your composition assignment, you'll fail. Here, I'll help you." Because that's exactly what Jane needed. The stunning object of her unrequited crush, sitting next to her on her bed with her Omega arm rubbing Omega oils against Jane's, making critical suggestions about the love poem meant for her. It was still terrible. But fairly soon, Sherlock was making stupid metaphors that compared faulty hydraulic pumps to broken hearts, and lovelorn lovers to solar panels under a rainy sky. Jane was giggling too much to go on. She did ultimately submit the poem in her English for engineers class and got a solid B. Sherlock sulked over that B for weeks. Since Sherlock had the sense of personal space of a cat, she was forever draping herself all over Jane or moaning that she just couldn't get comfortable unless her Jane rubbed her head. She'd close her eyes and fall asleep for the first time in 3 days. mumbling something about, "I'd be lost without my beta." The worst was that all through uni, at least once a semester, Sherlock would go into heat. She'd kept her diet pill promise, at least. She'd moan, "Jane, I need your assistance." Jane would dutifully go off and bring her soup or towels, while trying not to watch her move a dildo inside herself. It was a relief when they finally moved off campus and she could drop off the supplies and decamp to her own room, where she could light very pungent incense to try and drown out the scent that was there to remind her of what was happening one wall away. They graduated and formed their own consulting business. Sherlock made the designs and Jane did the practical applications. Jane praised God practically every day for landing them in Mrs. Hudson's orbit. The woman organized their offices, kept them in the field doing what they love, and all for a pittance of what she was worth. She'd say, "I'm not your secretary, dearie," and they make all the things work. Somehow, Jane and Sherlock were still living together. Sherlock presented Jane with a 30-page paper on why it made sense after graduation. Jane didn't bother getting past cheaper rent. They weren't exactly rolling in the funds in the first few years. Thankfully, Sherlock started staying with Mycroft or Sherry for her heats, and things settled down into their lives. They made a name for themselves. They were stuck consulting for Mycroft's charity a few times, since she'd moved primarily into administration. Jane said, "Do you think the stick growing in Mycroft's ass is like a tree, getting taller and bigger every year?" "We suspect it has rings, since the O-ring she has in there won't fit around it." Sherlock tapped a pen against her lips, which was why when Mycroft came back into the room and Jane said, "Oh, hello," Sherlock fell off her chair laughing. They were roped into a few charity events with Sherry, who would lounge around looking very well-dressed in her own clothing line, because, like all homes, she'd made a success of what she loved, and making comments about how Sherlock wasn't making the most of her opportunities. Thankfully, the clock Sherlock threw at her missed. "I meant to miss," said Sherlock. "Sure you did." "Fortunately, I meant to hit her genuine original something-something silk dress with a glass of red wine." Sherlock got that little smile. "I know." Those were the rare occasions when Sherlock made Jane tea just the way she liked it. Sherlock would go home to her parents for Christmas and come back with the urge to kill look that said she'd spent a week being asked when she was going to have children. Jane by now was ready to say that was never going to happen. But then the big dry in Australia happened. They weren't exactly called in. Sherlock decided that nature was calling them, and insisted that her designs for cheap, relatively speaking, solar-powered vacuum desalination were ready. After 7 months, Sherlock said, "If I get sent to another committee meeting where I am told Ms. Moriarty's signature, which will not be forthcoming, I shall stab something in the eye." Can't you call on mega solidarity in an Alf's world sort of thing? Sherlock looked extremely blank, which was Sherlock for shifty. She looked at the floor, which was very shifty. Jane flailed a hand in the air. "Miss Moriarty hit on you, and you noticed. I'm so proud of you." Jane actually was quite proud of Sherlock. "I notice." Sherlock was in a snit, and her body language couldn't have been more adorably defensive. "I am very observant." "But whether or not someone is an accountant or a programmer, but when the waiter at the wine bar offers you 50% discounts, you're not observant. That waiter was not flirting with me," which was so adorable that Sherlock thought so. "In any case, Ms. Moriarty is very interesting and controls our access, but I am not interested. I consider myself bonded to the..." Sherlock cleared her throat. "Work." Which was actually a lot closer than Jane would have expected. Still, what she was not prepared for was Ian Adler, who was exactly who Jane had been picturing all these years. He was suave. He was fit. He was very fit. No, strike that. He was obscenely fit. Jane would have dated him if he'd been in her weight class. He was debonair. He represented a major petroleum consortium. He had a jet. Not his specifically, but for his use. Sherlock stared at him every time he was in the room. It was very clear from the way she swallowed the first time they shook hands that Ian was a one true pairing to Sherlock. Sherlock just breathed a little bit faster when Ian was in the room. She stood that little bit taller. She designed a hydraulic pump that required 30% less fuel for him. Sherlock may as well have been writing soppy love poems for Ian. Admittedly, according to Mary, a frankly acrobatically fit photojournalist, who Jane met at a party in Ian's company penthouse, Ian had read 50 Shades of Grey one too many times, because he also had a red room. But Jane wasn't going to be that judgmental, unless he hurt Sherlock, which in case she was going to apply engineering on him. Jane owned wrenches. When Ian left, Sherlock moped around and acted like her hydrostatic pump died. Jane decided it was time for girl time, which was admittedly not really in their wheelhouse, but if she had to see Sherlock stare sadly into space one more time, Jane was going to lose it, cleaning their kitchen to gleaming. She canceled her planned dirty weekend with Mary, sexy photographers, and frankly filthy, in a good way, vacations, had to come after lifelong friends. She came home with a good bottle of wine and a ridiculously tall stack of movies with fit alphas in them. She could tell from the relieved expression on Sherlock's face that it was the right decision, even if she did whinge about the rom-coms. She'd forced Sherlock through 30 minutes when Jane broke down and asked, "So, you and Ian Adler, that's a thing, you and he." Sherlock looked away from the electrical unit she was fiddling with. "What are you babbling about? Ian's interests are entirely financial in nature." "Yeah, but you and he look so... And you were clearly... And you know, one true pairings for each other. And since he left, you've been so... And I mean, children, you know. I know your mum's been nagging you." Sherlock put down the electrical unit on the table. "I'm not having children. You know that." She looked blank and therefore shifty. "We're not telling Mother, but I told you this years ago." Jane was fairly certain that no, they had not had any such conversation. "What do you mean you told me?" "When you presented as a beta. I came to Bangkok, had the procedure done to block my fallopian tubes, and we built a water purifier to celebrate." Sherlock waved a hand in the air. "Obviously, if I wasn't going to have children with you, there wasn't any point." "Obviously." Jane had the feeling that there had been an entire series of conversations that she hadn't been having. And also, what? "Where did you find a doctor who'd do something like that? You were just 16. What if you'd changed your mind?" Sherlock glared. "Since I haven't, that's irrelevant. Anyway, Mycroft knew her." She waved off her reproductive system impatiently. "Unfortunately, I had underestimated your desire to be some child's milk mother, given that you've brought it up to me no less than 7 times in the last 20 years. And I made an unfortunate assumption that you would be interested in me non-platonically, which, since you weren't interested in assisting me through my heat, which features in the 90th percentiles of top fantasies for the average beta, I had to..." "When? What? You never asked me to assist you through your heat." Jane was fairly certain that she would have remembered that. Sherlock glared at her some more. "I asked you at a regular interval throughout university over a period of 4 years. "You asked me for soup and towels," said Jane with all the incredulity of a very incredulous person. I'm fairly certain I asked you to repeatedly insert a dildo with an inflatable knot and cilia while injecting me with a synthetic gel and marking my breasts with your teeth. Jane clutched the Union Jack pillow. It was that or throw it. Yeah, no! That didn't happen. I would remember that. Perhaps not in those terms, but Sherlock pointed a finger at her. What about all the times I asked you to steam up my ball valve while wearing the clothes that Sherry said could not fail? I thought you actually wanted me to steam clean your ball valves. The Union Jack pillow was in definite danger. And when I asked you to help me manually reduce the tension in my membranes? Sherlock was looking fairly desperate now. The Union Jack pillow was in maximum danger. In the red, really. I thought you meant the osmosis membranes. I wrote you a love poem. Sherlock was blinking now. You laughed and got a B. Sherlock looked aggrieved for past failures. Then Sherlock got that look. The look where her brain had turned into a jet engine and was currently knocking over buses. Would you like to? Have sex. Another turn of the engines. With me, right now. This moment. Oh, God, yes, said Jane, who had just enough time to toss the Union Jack to freedom, before Sherlock fell on her like a fairly frantic, many-limbed freight train. And actually, that metaphor was right out the window, because Sherlock's lips were on her lips. Ah, that brilliant mouth moving over hers, that scent, the scent Jane associated with everything that was good in the world, was surrounding her. Sherlock's hair brushing against her cheek, as Sherlock kissed her as if Jane was the source of oxygen. Skimmed those hands under Jane's shirt as if Jane was precious. Tentative fingers sliding over the silk and lace of Jane's bra. Lips applying suction to Jane's breasts, which was frankly unfair. Jane reached behind Sherlock's back and unfastened her bra in a single move and pushed Sherlock up so Jane could take advantage of being the one on the bottom to kiss one breast while caressing the other. It's Jane! Jane was not kind. She kept going until the keen turned into soft sobs. Finally, Jane softened her kisses, pulling Sherlock down to lie beside her. I've got you. Sherlock's ridiculously tight trousers were a bit of a problem, but Jane wasn't an engineer for nothing. She had them down to their skivvies and then down to bare-skinned. She teased the slick folds of flesh between Sherlock's legs. Jane had already planned the dildo that she'd use the next time, but this time, she didn't want to lose a minute going to her room. She didn't want to lose a moment of the expression on Sherlock's face when she slid one and then two and then three fingers inside her, twisting them and spreading and narrowing her fingers to the rising and falling of Sherlock's cries. There was this one move that Jane liked to call knotting, which required all five fingers, but she took her time to Sherlock's cries, suddenly spreading her fingers, and she took Sherlock apart. It felt so good to do that. After she'd run her through a few cycles, Sherlock looked wrecked. Those all-seeing eyes of hers were blown and glazed. She said, Jane. And it may as well have been Morse code for all the words. She pulled Jane up and softly nibbled her way down Jane, who didn't really expect on their first time for that clever tongue to part her labial folds, to pull out her own cries. Sherlock said, I've been thinking about this since I was 16. Clever fingers curving up inside Jane, applying her own trick, until she felt limp and boneless. When Sherlock was done torturing her, she flopped on top of Jane. She was frankly heavier than she looked. After a certain amount of shoving, they found a certain cuddle equilibrium. Generally, Jane tried to avoid this part. It was all a bit mushy, but this was Sherlock. This was Sherlock sweeping her fingers back and forth down Jane's body, who was examining every inch of her. Jane smiled. "So you've wanted to bond with me since you were 16? Nine. The day Mr. Stamford assigned you to show me around the playground."
"What, seriously?" said Jane.
She pushed Sherlock back so she could get a look at her face.
"I did ask at the time," said Sherlock, looking slightly cross.
She lightly bit Jane's shoulder, which, yeah, she had.
"Yeah, but you were nine."
As with so many conversations with Sherlock, Jane was having trouble wrapping her brain around this.
"I knew from the way you listened to me talk about my water web."
Sherlock rubbed her cheek against Jane's shoulder, which left her lips in very interesting places.
Maybe you should have asked again."
Jane arched her back to keep those lips in those very interesting places. Sherlock applied those lips.
"I was planning on it." An almost reverent kiss.
"We'd talked about not having children, and I'd taken care of things."
A brush of her fingers.
"But I wanted it to be right. I wanted something special. I found the most beautiful spot I could find, the Temple of the Reclining Buddha."
"With the frangipani?"
Jane kissed the top of Sherlock's head.
"I still hate the scent of it," said Sherlock,
lightly nuzzling the curve of Jane's breast.
I wrote a speech. I had Sherry review it, because I'm not always... This isn't my area."
"Sherry knew?" Jane pushed herself up on one elbow. Sherlock made a disgruntled mph noise at the loss of Jane's breast.
"Mycroft knows, which is worse."
She rolled over, looking at the back of the sofa.
"But then you made it clear that you weren't, well, that you weren't waiting for me.
And then it was all so horrible. So I tried to delete it. Everything but the Buddha and the frangipani.
The reclining Buddha is lazy and fat."
Sherlock curled away from Jane, which was just not on. They were cuddling.
"Possibly not his fault," said Jane,
kissing the back of Sherlock's neck.
"I'm not the one who's had sex on three continents."
Seven. At Sherlock's stiffened spine.
"What? It's been 20 years.
Our business has been very well traveled."
"Yes, but Antarctica?"
Sherlock stopped talking to the sofa back so she could sit and glare down at Jane. She looked beautiful and racked with her hair at wild angles. Jane had done that. Jane put her hands on the shoulders that were hers to touch.
Bored scientists who meant nothing.
"I've forgotten them.
You should forget them."
Jane pulled Sherlock down for a kiss.
Sherlock did not look forgetful.
Jane applied 20 years of practical study to the process of making her forget. Sherlock gave way on that point.
It would be nice to say that that was the end of it, that all Jane had to do was endure an embarrassingly long look from Mycroft and a frankly horrifying shopping trip, slash "be nice to my sister, you moron" lecture from Sherry, and dinner with both their parents, and a ceremony on a beach beneath the site of their desalination plant, the end. There was, however, still the matter of Ms. Moriarty, who seemed to find the idea of Sherlock bonding with a beta to be beneath both of them. Something about omegas with no needs for knots. She actually proposed a very different arrangement to Sherlock a week before the bonding. Well, maybe she shouldn't have called Jane a beta grease monkey. That was all fine. Luring Sherlock to the top of the Reichenbach Dam for a final confrontation on love, war, and water rights. However, that was not on. Fortunately, Jane did have 20-plus years of knowing when Sherlock was about to go off and do something spectacularly stupid. It was that blank, shifty look. So when Sherlock slipped and almost fell, Jane was there to catch her hand and brace them both. As to Ms. Moriarty, she fell into the tomb that made no sound, which was too bad, because the officials decided that they weren't tearing up that much concrete for a tragic accident. It would put the project back by 5 years. To be clear, neither Jane nor Sherlock were entirely forthcoming over what exactly had happened. They were just happy to get someone to finally sign off on the environmental review for their project. The officials renamed the dam the Moriarty Dam, and Jane got her bonding on the beach.
Even better, after the opening ceremony at their desalination plant, she and Sherlock had their own ceremony in the North Tower. Jane kissed Sherlock and said, "What do you think of our baby?"
"She's beautiful," said Sherlock, but she wasn't looking at the plant. Fairly soon, neither was Jane.